and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network. College basketball season quickly approaching. I know we're kind of in the midst of football season. It's always a crazy time of year crossing over into all this stuff. We just did our UVA basketball good old season preview. Now we're going to go look a little bit more at the ACC as a whole. And I've got one of my favorites in college basketball media right now. You hear him on the Field of 68. You can hear him a lot more on ESPN ACC Network this coming year. It's Terrence Oglesby. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. We're getting closer. And for the first time in a long time, Virginia cares about football. So we're going to have to transition you back to basketball. But I think there's a lot to look forward to. Tony Elliott used to be my mom's neighbor. So that's also, I'm going to throw that in there whenever he was the offensive coordinator at Clemson. So I'm happy for him. He's got a son that was a really good basketball player. I don't know if he still is, but his little butt was running up and down and scoring on everybody whenever he lived in Clemson. But it's good to be with you. I'm excited about Virginia. I think it's going to be a fun season.
Yeah, it's a weird time of year because normally Virginia fans are so conditioned to transitioning to basketball in October. This year, it hasn't quite happened yet because obviously everyone's, it's a 7-1 football team. Even if you win ugly, you're still winning. So any thoughts on UVA football? Just kind of watching Tony Elliott from afar?
I'm a one-trick pony. So I do wish I knew more about football. I just don't. I enjoy football. I'm happy
for
Tony.
Doing well. Yeah. Yeah,
I know they're doing well, and I'm happy for Tony. That's all I got there.
Yeah, all right. But I love it.
Yeah, I'm a one-trick pony.
Well, let's get into UVA. Start of a new era with Ryan Odom coming in now. Obviously, last season it was just kind of it was a mess from the get-go with Tony Bennett's sudden retirement. Ron Sanchez kind of holding down the ship there as the season went on. The roster had a lot of flaws on it already. And then kind of we get into Ryan Odom now. So what do you make overall of just Ryan Odom's fit? Obviously, he's a good fit for the university with all his ties there, but just fit culturally and everything else.
I anytime you go from Tony Bennett, who fits the fan base and fits the booster club, and Tony almost dressed the same way. It was the rest of the booster. It was the booster club. So, there's a part of that that was missed, and it's like, where are you going to find that? Well, Ryan Odom kind of fits that situation perfectly as well. How he carries himself off the floor, how he holds himself at press conferences. It's always been a defense first place, at least since Tony got the job. That's not going to change. How they execute that plan is going to be a little bit different, but it is going to be, I'm really intrigued because he's always recruited well. I think that's going to continue. And he brought in some really nice pieces, and I think that's going to continue as well because the fan base and the booster club's excited. The NIL is going to help. And to be honest with you, Tony turned Virginia into such a brand. I think it holds water with anybody as soon as they pick up the phone. So I think it's a perfect fit culturally. I think it's a perfect fit professionally. And I just think he carries himself in such a way that is also conducive to what Virginia fans and Virginia faithful like.
Yeah, I always said that, Ryan's going to have a little bit of an easier job as far as, you're not starting from nothing like when Tony Bennett kind of came in all those years ago. They've had that success that they've, people have been able to see. So already, you see the V-Saber when you're on the recruiting trail, people kind of know, all right, Virginia basketball is a serious player in college basketball. But they did have to start basically from scratch with this roster. Elijah Gertrude, the only scholarship player back. But they brought in a lot of guys from some good mid-majors. They went international. What do you make of this overall roster?
Two internationals, right?
Yeah.
Dorn and Tyce DeRitter. Man, the first thing that pops out to me is Jakari White and Malik Thomas can really score the basketball. Jakari White, for those who haven't watched film of this guy, he is so creative in how he can score. He understands he's going to be able to let the ball move. It's going to find him. He finds gaps. Just a really talented player. Malik Thomas, much in the same vein, who finally saw some significant success at San Francisco. He was a first-team All-West Coast guy last year. So you bring him over. Those two guys on the wings can really score it. But the biggest point is if you're going to have scores and you're going to bring in high-level transfers, you got to have a point guard that can get them to rock. I thought Dallin Hall is one of the most underrated transfer pickups in college basketball because I mean, he comes from BYU. I think he did a Mormon mission. So like, he's one of these guys that he's like 24, 25 years old. He's manning the point for you. He's going to be a player that really kind of rights the ship, and he shoots good percentages on top of that. So I think he's a good athlete. He's 6'4". You look across their backcourt, like, not small. Jakari White's a little light in the backside, but like, he's athletic and long enough to where he's going to be able to defend his position. And they've always, at VCU, they force turnovers under Ryan Odom. I think they're going to be able to do a lot of the same stuff at Virginia. And whenever you have this old veteran lineup, I think that helps.
Yeah, the Dallin Hall is an interesting one. He's, you know, got off to a little bit of a slow start in those exhibition games. Take it with a grain of salt.
They mean zero.
Yeah.
They mean absolutely nothing, because coaches aren't showing their entire play sheet. Like, don't worry about all that stuff. He's probably, whenever the rubber hits the road, like, they're going to put Dallin Hall where he's best at. During the exhibitions, they're letting him wander a little bit. And whenever everything starts up and the games matter, they're going to put him where he's best. And that's never the case in exhibition games. They're constantly fiddling around and trying to figure some of these things out.
Yeah, you could tell too, like, he wasn't really looking for his shot. He was just kind of trying to make sure the offense was flowing. And that's a huge for him. He talked a little bit about this with me, is like, you know, he was on that team last year at BYU with Yegor Dimon, and so that kind of is why he had a little bit of lesser role, because they wanted to get the ball in Dimon's hands. Yeah. But he is such a good connector, facilitator, and like you said, just going to get everyone involved.
I do think it's going to be an adjustment for him going from Kevin Young out of BYU to playing for Ryan, because I'm just going to shoot you straight here. Like, the funniest thing to me ever is when a new coach comes in, every coach is like, well, we're going to play fast. We're going to be exciting. We're going to be fun. Like, Ryan had one of the slowest teams in college basketball last year at VCU. Like, they're not going to be fast. Like, is there going to be a little bit of an uptick from Tony Bennett? Yeah, because there's not a snail crawling up the floor. Like, next year, they will at least, you know, light jog up the floor. So it's not going to be some like pressure shooting the first 5 seconds. It's not going to be that. They're going to defend. They're going to try to create a turnover and then try to score quickly. But like, it's an adjustment for Dallin, and it's going to take him a little bit of time. But I just feel, I'm not worried. And there's nothing, especially over the last 5 or 6 years since I started media, 4 years ago? I haven't been doing this very long. Like, I put a lot of stock in scrimmages. Like, oh man, this team beat that. It has zero correlation to what actually is going to happen.
Yeah. And a lot of times before, they were the secret scrimmages, so we couldn't actually know what the things were happening in the scrimmages, but people would take the score away and, you know, get into their big overreactions. I think there was a couple years ago where Virginia beat UConn in a preseason scrimmage, and they went on to be one of the greatest teams in college basketball history, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like you said, take it with a grain of salt.
So I remember when I was playing at Clemson, like, we went down to scrimmage, or Georgia came up to scrimmage us my freshman year, and we beat the brakes off of them. It was Dennis Felton's team. We beat the piss out of them. And then, And then we went down to Athens the following year, and they beat us. But Dennis Felton called like 16 timeouts. So like, every time, like, we were a team that relied on runs. Every time we'd hit two shots in a row, we'd call a timeout. And we ended up, I think, winning by like 3 or 4. But like, he kept calling these timeouts to where we couldn't get any rhythm, and that's how we functioned. So like, I think he was trying to give his team confidence, but at the same time, like, the real outcome wasn't necessarily, and these exhibitions now are different, but still, like, they mean jack.
Yeah, absolutely. Just based off your own experience playing overseas, I want to get your thoughts on just not only Tess DeRitter and Johan Grunlow coming in for UVA from overseas, but also just kind of a mass amount of international guys coming over to college. I know there's a good one down in Blacksburg that Virginia fans will get accustomed to seeing this year. There's a few others around. I know Duke's got Dame Saar. Just what your thoughts on just the international influx right now in college hoops?
The Dame Saar one, I'm not as worried about, because he's young and like that. Like, I actually called this press, like, whenever Creighton, they signed this guy named Fedor Zukić, who's still on the roster. We talked, we talked with a couple of people. I was like, look, if this is going to go through, this is going to open up the floodgates, because what's going to end up happening is some of these pros that are underneath these 40,000 a year contracts, which are much more common in Europe than people realize. There's not a lot of people playing for six figures in Europe. That needs to be recognized first and foremost. That's the reason you're having the influx. And so, like, I knew this was going to happen with some of these older players, because the NCAA is so scared of getting sued, it hampers everything they freaking do. Like, that's a big issue in my mind. And the first thing people are like, well, Terrence doesn't want European. But I am European. Like, what are we talking about? I'm Norwegian. I have a Norwegian mother. I was born in Norway. Like, wife is Swedish, speak the language, whole deal. Like, it's, to me, it bringing these guys over, I don't fault the coaches. I fault the NCAA for their ineptitude in handling this situation. If I were Ryan Odom, I would have done the exact same thing. I would have grabbed Grunlow so quickly, because he was a good player at that top level. I would have grabbed Tyster Ritter so quickly, because not only was he a good player, he was the leading scorer on a team that won the Basketball Champions League last year. What are we doing? That being said, I would have grabbed him. They're both very good players. There is an adjustment when coming from Europe to the States. Why is that? Well, in Europe, very organized, not a whole lot of turnovers, a lot of offenses being run, a lot less mistakes. There is an element of college basketball, which I think is the most beautiful element of it, is that you have to be good in chaos. Well, some of these European guys that come over, they struggle with that aspect. I don't think Tyster Ritter is going to struggle in that aspect. I think he's going to be really good, because, like, he just kind of understands how to play. He's 6'8". He's an inside-out guy. He's not going to be overwhelmed by the athleticism, because he saw a certain amount of athleticism playing for the Champions League. He's used to guarding those people. So how all this works, I think the fact that they're playing a slower tempo that's much more conducive to what the European systems are going to help with that transition. And I just think he's a really freaking good player. So, like, I think a lot of those things matter and factor in.
We were talking earlier on the other podcast, just, is he going to make the all-freshman team because he's considered a freshman right now? Like,
which is crazy. To me, but I digress. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's, I don't think he does, because I think the rest of the Russian class are going to have big numbers. Like, I think Michael Brown Jr. is going to have huge numbers. I think Kimber is going to have huge numbers. And I think there's a couple of other freshmen that are going to pop up too. Shelton Henderson down in Miami comes to mind. Muhammad Silla at Georgia Tech comes to mind. Like, there's Caleb Wilson at Carolina. Is there a chance he does? Yeah, I don't consider him a freshman, though.
I know. It was when he popped up on the roster listed as freshman, I texted the SID. I'm like, are you sure about that? And he's like, yep, that's what he's listed as. And I'm like, all right, man, we'll run with it this year. But yeah, just definitely interesting. You mentioned kind of the NCAA part of this, and, like, just off the cuff here, London Johnson is a hot topic among college basketball right now.
All right, so I'm glad you brought that up, because I was asked to talk about this in game one. And my first game of the season is at Louisville. I open up the season. Yeah.
You're prepped.
Yeah. So London Johnson, the interesting part about it is, like, you can't have these guys coming over from Europe that are making less than 50 grand and tell an American kid who's making less than 50 grand that he can't go to college. Like, that's where the slippery slope is. Because you can't just say, well, it's okay for this guy, but it's not okay for that guy just because he's on American soil. What sense does that make? It doesn't make any. Now, there's another eligibility case coming up where this was a kid that went OTE, and I can't remember his name. Yeah, I don't know if you had it or not, but, like, he went through the draft process. He has been a professional. He has been paid. Like, that's the one now that will turn the dial. And there's a lot of legalese there that I'm not smart enough to repeat to you, but there are some problems where do I think if that one goes, like, we're just, like, they're just going to say whatever G Leaguer wants to come back to play, just play. I hope that does not happen, but I think there's a genuine misconception in that the salaries that these European kids are given are basically called basic needs salaries. Like, you, does it pay for their apartment? Does it pay for their travel, their food? Like, basic requirements to essentially live and play basketball if that's going to be your profession or if you're going to be in school, correct? You can't do that and not G League Ignite these guys who are in the very same situation. That's where it gets slippery. And I, to be honest with you, I'm okay with those guys like Ledden Johnson coming back because like you can't have one without the other. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
This started when Zugic got eligible at Creighton. Ever since then, people are going to find ways because there's too much money right now.
Yeah, I remember you talking about Zugic on a couple different platforms last year, and
people
you were
didn't,
right.
people didn't believe me. Like I was like, this is going to be bad because like what's going to happen is these guys in Europe aren't getting paid that much, and I think there's a grand misconception of like, oh well, he's in Europe, he must be making arbitrary number, 150 grand. It's not the case. Like there's a lot of bread and water contracts over there. Like, I'm just telling you. There's a lot of bread and water contracts over there.
I know the Ledden Johnson ones that one of the Virginia fans are watching carefully because he was one that was at seemingly days away from signing with UVA before he went into the G League instead. Last thing on UVA here, I want to get your favorite thing about the Cavaliers, and then we'll go into the biggest concern about UVA heading into the season. So favorite thing.
Just how old they are, first and foremost. It's a veteran group. Now, you're going to have to put these pieces together. I like the different ways that you can play with Tista Ritter, and you can go to the bench and go a little bit more athletic with Onyensa. Favorite things, probably the guards. The guards and the wings and the guys who can score, and then the combination with Dallin Hall in there, just older guys that are going to be able to make things happen. That's a bit of an interesting one.
Biggest concern?
That it doesn't all come together.
Yeah.
Like everybody says, I'm going to play team basketball until you lose a couple of games and your numbers aren't where they need to be. That's my biggest concern.
Yeah. I mean, Pat Kelsey made it look a little easier than it actually was last year with kind of bringing that whole roster together for the first time. And so everyone this offseason is like, well, we'll just do what that guy does. But it's not as easy. It's not as easy as said, because there's countless other examples of that not working in this new transfer era of college basketball.
And the thing is, too, is like you're going to have to live with a down year. And I think the football situations with all these firings, like you're going to have to understand, like you're going to miss on guys and they're not going to fit what you want. The best coaches now are the guys who have had years to where they've been able to readjust, like, or for example, guys who have been at the JUCO level, like you see those guys have success because they're used to flipping and turning over a roster and being like, hey, these guys are good at this. They don't necessarily need to fit to me. I need to fit to them. And that's kind of where it gets tough.
Yeah. Let's go into the ACC now. Top six, the ACC preseason poll had Duke, Louisville, UNC, NC State, Virginia, and SMU. Terrence, where are you on that six right now? Do you have any swaps or any other teams in there?
Man, I had my – if you give me 1 second, I'll be able to find my
Yeah, I think I saw you put the full 18 out there.
I did, and people loved it.
No one had any complaints, I'm sure.
I got Louisville winning the league.
Yeah,
it's going to be tight, though. Both Louisville and Duke. Yeah, to me, they're in a tier on their own. And then I have NC State third, Carolina fourth, Virginia fifth, Miami sixth.
Okay.
Virginia Tech seventh.
Yeah.
I'm high on them.
That's my under the radar team too, and Virginia fans want to keep arguing with me, but I'm like, dude. I mean this Neo kid, like he's something else,
and he's the real deal. And there's people around him too. And last year, like I hate to even say it, but like they lost their point guard before the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, there you go.
And Mike Young's always been one of my favorite coaches. I think he is a pretty smart guy out there in Blacksburg. Yeah, I want to talk a little bit of NC State because you've probably seen a lot more of Will Wade basketball than I have. But I'm a little skeptical about the front court as far as the center position and kind of their size out there. They didn't have a lot of size at obviously before at McNeese, but it's a different conference.
Playing in the Southland.
Exactly.
If there's anybody who's going to be able to scheme, it's Will. Will's a savant. is a strong word, but he is very smart and very game plan oriented. I think he's going to be fine. And if there's one thing Will's great at, it's in infusing his confidence into his players. I think they're going to be really good. The center position is a concern. There's no rim protection. Scotty Abube transferred from Wyoming, and he is a bouncy, big body bully. Not a ton of skill, but like anything around the rim, he's going to be able to get up and at least contest. So I trust that they're going to be able to scheme it up. And I
Yeah.
think they're going to score a lot of points.
UNC, they've had
I
a
don't know.
Nick you don't know?
I don't know. Have you seen that episode of How I Met Your Mother?
Oh, you're talking my
Where,
ballpark
okay, so there's an episode, they call it the overcorrection.
right now.
Have you seen this episode?
Yes, yeah.
All right, so I almost wonder if that's what Carolina has going on right now, because they were so small last year that they just went absolutely massive this year, and there doesn't seem to be a giant middle ground. I think one of the things that would concern me, I've said this, I don't know that Hubert Davis knows who he is as a coach,
Yeah.
because he has gone so many different directions. He's gone super small with Vince Alan-Lubin at the five playing extended minutes. He's gone super big. He had to deal with the RJ Caleb situation where they weren't his guys, but he was having to play mediator, and it worked for a season, and then it floundered the next. There has been, I think, volatility is such a common word right now in college basketball, but at least sometimes when coaches are in the portal or they're grabbing certain guys, there is consistency about what a coach likes.
Yeah.
I haven't seen much consistency as far as what Carolina brings in. So I'm very up in the air. I think they do have talent. Luka Bogovic just got cleared. So we'll see how that goes. He's very good. Played in the Montenegrin League for SC Derby, averaged a ton of points in the ABA League, which is the Adriatic, which is but basically the best teams in all the old Balkan countries. So it's a tough, he's a tough player. Their point guards are good. They're going to get rid of it. I just don't know how it's going to go.
Yeah.
And I know he loves Carolina. Like, dude, nobody loves Carolina like Hubert Davis loves Carolina. Your love for something doesn't necessarily say you're going to win a national championship. So I hope it goes well, because I've come to like Hubert. I don't know that it's going to, because we don't know. But I do like the pieces that they brought on.
You've got Virginia fifth. That's kind of where most people have them between fourth and fifth. Where, I guess, what's the ceiling for Virginia this year, or what's the
Third,
floor?
third,
Third.
third's the ceiling. They're just not as good as Duke and Louisville.
Yeah.
The floor, if it doesn't come together, I think is middle of the conference, top half of the bottom, like 10, 11, 12. If it doesn't come together, and if Tyus D. Ritter doesn't, adjust to the American game. I don't think that's going to happen. I'd be much more prone to believe, four through seven is pretty much where I have them. Best case, worst case. But you said absolute floor. So that's if the wheels fall off. And I don't think they will in year one. I think there's momentum. I think people are excited and all those things. And guys are getting an opportunity to be good on the big stage, Malik and Jakari. So I the 4 to 7 is kind of where I would assume.
Yeah, we don't need a repeat of the floor from last year. You said you have Louisville over Duke. Just compare and contrast those two teams real quick, because obviously they are kind of the cream of the crop this year in the ACC.
Duke is excellent. Cam Boozer is excellent. Lack of a true point guard. Caden Boozer is a true point guard, but like, is John going to hand him the keys really early? I don't know.
Sure.
They don't necessarily have this big, scoring two or tough defensive minded two or three. Hemenya competes, but he's not like a, Sion James type deal. They do have, rim protection. They have Cam Boozer's awesome. The guards at Louisville are just insane to me. Like, Mychal Brown Jr. was the best player on Team USA over the summer, including DeBanta. He was the 1A best player. The fact that he didn't get World Cup MVP for the U19s is highway robbery. And I think that had more to do with the shoes he wears than his ability to carry a team, which he did. Ryan Conwell is terrific. The guy that you know so well, Isaac McNeely, is a career 42% three-point shooter. Career. Not
it's legit.
Which, by the way, one of the most awkward interviews I've ever had to do was at the Final Four, was the day that Isaac McNeely committed to Pat Kelsey, and we had Pat Kelsey and Ryan Odom on the same freaking show together, sitting down less than 5 or 6 hours after he committed.
I'm so glad you brought that up.
Squirming. I was like, dude, we can't talk about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like not that they weren't super professional, super nice about it, because they were.
Yeah.
But it was also like, ugh.
As soon as I saw,
we'll just have them on.
Yeah. As soon as I saw the notification that Pat Kelsey and Ryan Owen were going on with each other, I was like, well, I got to watch this. Like,
and it was all just coach speak and happy talk. But
exactly. Best buds. Whatever. But
Ryan Odom, man, he wouldn't be in the spot he's in if he wasn't like the most super duper competitive guy.
Yeah. That was fascinating. TV or, you know, Twitter, if you want to call it that. Let's talk a little bit about just kind of the top players in this conference real quick before we round this out. The first team all ACC, I think this is what you had. Cam Boozer, Mikel Brown Jr., Darion Williams, Neoklis Abdalis. Neo.
Yeah.
Straight matrix. Isaiah Evans is what you had. I threw out, here's some other names I think will be around that ACC kind of all ACC conversation. Ryan Conwell, Boopy Miller, Donald Hand Jr., Bay Ndongo, Caleb Wilson, Malik Thomas, Testa Ritter, JJ Starling, Henry Vessar, Marcus Burton, Nick Davidson, and Nathan
Marcus
George.
Burton's the one that probably, I hate putting guys up at first and second team that like have never won.
Yeah.
Nick Davidson's probably a third team guy. Tyster Ritter, I think that's a bit strong. I think he's very good. I think it's a bit strong.
Well, that's if Virginia does well and they're third, like you said, their ceiling is, then that's when you usually get a guy or two around that all ACC conversation.
Yeah. I think Malik Thomas would be that guy if somebody's going to be there, at least right now.
Yeah.
At least right now.
I don't know who does the all ACC preseason stuff for Field of 68. Maybe it's Rob, maybe it's Jeff, but
it's Rob and Jeff. It's Rob and Jeff. Yeah.
They had DeRitter first team.
They bicker back and forth, but it's Rob and Jeff who do it.
Yeah. They had DeRitter first team all ACC. And I was like, that was a little surprising for me.
That's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would personally go third. There's a little bit of an adjustment process, but it's possible.
Yeah. Coach of the year. Just throw that one out there. This is like the award that always gets rewarded to the team that kind of outdoes their expectations. You got a lot of first year coaches in the ACC this year. Any early, keep your eye on this coach this year and this team.
Miami. I'm big on Miami, and like they're gonna have to win games in the 50s because I wonder if they're gonna be able to score consistently. But Trey Donaldson's like a big body point guard, and there's one thing that wins consistently in college basketball is if they can beat you up. Miami's gonna be able to beat you up. These dudes are huge. Trey Donaldson's a big guard, true Washington transfer from New Mexico, who I was able to call games for Fox last year with regularity. He was terrific and a big athlete and gets out in the passing lane. Shelton Henderson could be another one of these freshmen that could play a huge role. Malik Renew, who comes from Indiana, and I think under Jay Lucas, he's going to be much better than he was for Mike Woodson, who basically just rolled the balls out and was a terrible college coach. Yeah. And then Ernest Uday comes from TCU after he was at Kansas as well. He comes back to South Florida. So you look at that lineup from a defensive perspective, they can give you problems. So if there's one team I'm a little higher on, it's them.
The big question for the ACC this year is how many teams make the NCAA tournament? Is this really the year the ACC can kind of bounce back? I'll put it to you that like that, how many teams from the ACC do you think could be there in March?
I have eight. I actually think eight make it.
I think
I
that's
think
the target
SMU.
they need.
Yeah, I think eight makes it. I think SMU crawls in. They have one of the better backcourts in the conference. Virginia Tech crawls in. Like I said, I think Miami just wins some games they're not supposed to in the non-conference, and they probably should win most of their games in the non-conference. But you get my drift just because of how physical they're going to be. Virginia makes it. Yeah, and then the top four, Carolina, NC State, Duke, Louisville. I think they all make it. I think there's a lot of teams that are kind of flirting with that. A lot of people have Syracuse. They've had talent. I got to see it to believe it. If they don't make it with this crew, I'm scratching my head a little bit.
I like Nathan George. The time I got to see him last year when Virginia played Georgia Tech, that was on Tony Bennett Day, actually, now that I think about it. Do you think the ACC is ready to kind of bounce back? And they got the top tier talent with Duke and Louisville this year, I think.
Say that again.
Do you think they can kind of be back up there among the better
Virginia?
conf or no the ACC? Do you think they're
Yeah.
going to be back up
Well,
there this
hey,
year?
look, the SEC beat the drum out of the ACC and the ACC Challenge. And here's the thing, those things freaking matter. I've said this before, I'll say it again. Like, your cake is baked by January for a conference. You have to win games in the non-conference. There's no fiddling. I'm going to not use the word I would like to use. There's no fiddling around in November, December. You've got two exhibitions. You're able to practice since early September. You got to be ready in November. Not just a couple of teams in the league. The entire league has to be ready. And I think the league as a whole has understood that now. Better wake up. This is frustrating for me because I feel like we've tried to keep up with the Joneses with football for so long that we've diverted our attention away from what matters in this conference. Like, and I understand football makes the money, not naive to that. But the notoriety from these schools, people from around the world aren't applying to North Carolina to go watch Bill Belichick. They're applying to North Carolina because that baby blue jersey and what Michael Jordan did, what Dean Smith did. But all the history of Carolina blue and all that stuff, those are basketball jerseys. Those aren't football helmets. Like, get it together, win these games in November, December, and then we'll have something to talk about coming up, back into February where there's a lot more excitement around the league.
Yeah, that's what they need this year. They need to win those early games to set themselves up later. Let's that Terrence, appreciate you coming on today. This was great. I know you've got a lot going on this year. You got Field of
Hey, I got a lot
68.
going on here. A week prior to game time, I got all kinds of stuff coming up. So I'm sorry I only gave you 30 minutes, but this is kind of where I'm at. I'm getting text messages and emails as we're talking the whole time. So
No.
I'm sorry that we couldn't stay longer, but I'm looking forward to the season. I think Virginia's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. First game for ESPN. What you got this year?
I got ESPN on ACC Network. I'm South Carolina State at Louisville to open up 9 p.m. opening day, 11:03. So tune in with me. It's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to get going.
Right, we'll be looking forward to it. That's it for the Who's On podcast. We will catch you all next week after we got some basketball to talk about. So see you then.